Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The Czech foreign minister says Britain will remain an important ally and business partner even post-Brexit. The Czech Republic has become the first Schengen country to stop granting visas to Czech nationals, and all 34 coronavirus tests conducted in the country so far are negative. Britain will remain an important ally and business partner for the Czech Republic despite its departure from the European Union, Czech Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček said on Britain's last day in the alliance. In a video posted on Twitter, Petříček described Britain as a close partner and ally who had assisted the Czech Republic on the way to EU membership. He expressed the hope that the two countries would continue to cooperate closely in the areas of business, cybersecurity, research and environmental protection, as well as fostering strong people-to-people contacts. Having studied in Great Britain, the country has grown close to my heart. I hope its departure from the EU will not put a distance between us, Petříček said. The Czech Republic has become the first Schengen country to stop granting visas to Chinese nationals. Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček told journalists the Czech Republic had suspended the issuing of visas on January the 29th, and Czech visa centres in China were closed until further notice. The minister also confirmed that negotiations were underway on further measures to prevent the spread of the coronavirus to this country. In a related development, Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said on Thursday evening that unless negotiations with partner states to try to get Czech nationals out of Sichuan produced results by Saturday, the Czech Republic would send a government plane for them. The Czech Republic has 5 Czech nationals in the city who wish to return home. The Czech Republic has so far tested 34 cases of suspected coronavirus with all results negative, Health Minister Adam Vojtěch reported on Friday. Currently, no further suspected cases have been reported. In response to the WHO declaring a state of public health emergency, the Czech Republic introduced screening at all Czech international airports, whereas previously they were in effect only at Prague's main airport. The Czech government is to meet on Monday to debate banning all direct flights from China. The health minister said he considered such a move legitimate. The Senate narrowly passed a resolution on Thursday urging the government not to restrict legal gun ownership when implementing the European Union Weapons Directive. The resolution, which argues the Czech Weapons Act sufficiently regulates gun ownership in the country, came in response to a petition signed by nearly 100,000 citizens. Under current legislation, firearms can be licensed to people who have a clean criminal record, pass a gun proficiency test, and undergo a medical examination. The police have filed charges against a 31-year-old man who was detained after trying to force his way into the Chamber of Deputies on Thursday. The incident happened when the chamber was in session and the man reportedly threatened the guards with a knife. He was apprehended and remains in custody. The man faces up to 4 years in prison for violence against a public official. The motive behind his actions remains unclear. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Saturday should be partly cloudy to overcast with rain and day temperatures between 10 and 14 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, an increasing number of British are seeking to secure EU citizenship in light of Brexit. A special screening this Saturday will highlight a 1987 Tatra expedition that left a communist state but returned to democracy. And later we talk to an Icelandic baker, David Arnórsson, who set up a successful bakery in Prague. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Not all Brits are ecstatic as their country leaves the European Union this Friday. Some are looking to secure EU citizenship through a second passport. This is also the case in Czechia, where the number of British nationals applying for Czech citizenship has increased more than threefold since 2016. Tom McEncrow has the details.
I met a Czech girl when I was at university and moved out here, thinking I would try it for a year or two, and never went back, basically.
Mark Child has been living in the Czech Republic since 1995. He applied for Czech citizenship last year after beginning the process in 2016 and was ceremoniously sworn in as a Czech citizen on Thursday, just one day before the official Brexit date.
Český občan Mark Simon Child.
He says Brexit was not the sole reason for his choice to get a Czech passport, but certainly a factor and a subject of discussion among his community.
I think one of the big concerns, not just here in Czech, but the 3 million British expats living in the EU, is that we as, you know, humans and family members do not end up being political makeweights in the negotiations between Britain and the EU.
Statistics from the Ministry of Interior seem to indicate that there is indeed a concern among parts of the expat community. The number of applications has been rising since the Brexit referendum was held in June 2016, says Interior Ministry spokesperson Ondřej Krátoška.
Počet žádostí britských občanů o udělení státního občanství České republiky.
In 2016 there were just 19 applications. In both 2017 and 2018 the number was around 40 annually. Last year the amount of applications reached 64.
A v loni to už bylo 64 žádostí.
Even if they have not yet been sworn in as Czech citizens, those who have applied before the Brexit deadline will benefit from the lower conditions benchmark that membership of the EU provides. Ondřej Krátoška from the Ministry of Interior explains.
Co se týká změn podmínek před Brexitem a po Brexitu,
as far as changes in application conditions are concerned, then those handed in before the Brexit date will continue to be considered as applications from EU citizens, for whom, for example, the minimum residence period requirement is 3 years. However, applications sent after the UK leaves the European Union will require a permanent residence of 5 years.
Po Brexitu už bude požadován trvalý pobyt pětiletý.
If the basic criteria are met, applicants for Czech citizenship then have to score at least 60% in a subsequent multiple-choice Czech history and culture exam. There is also the issue of passing a language test. Mr. Child says that since he has been living in the country for decades, neither posed a particular challenge to him. What he does see as a potential challenge for prospective applicants is the surrounding bureaucracy.
I'm fortunate enough that my wife is a lawyer. She's well connected. She knows all the different offices and was able to help me with the stack of papers and documents that I needed to collect.
The Ministry of Interior registered more than 8,000 British citizens living in the Czech Republic in 2019. The amount of Brits registered under a permanent residency permit was 2,666.
Tom McEncrow with that report. Moving on now, in 1987, a Czechoslovak Tatra truck set off on a trip around the planet that was to take in no fewer than 67 countries. The crew were treated like heroes when they left. However, by the time they returned, communism had ended and interest in their adventures evaporated fast. Now, long-lost footage from the trip is to be shown for the first time at Czech radio. Ian Willoughby has more.
Ze staroměstského náměstí v Praze vyjel dnes speciální nákladní auto.
The Czechoslovak media was out in force in early 1987 when thousands saw off a Tatra 815 truck from Prague's Old Town Square. It was beginning a three-year expedition dubbed Tatra around the world.
Kromě reprezentace československého automobilového průmyslu a dokumentování,
as well as representing Czechoslovakia's auto industry and documenting our socialist society's dreams of peace aimed at understanding between the nations, the goal of this long-distance trip is to test out the design and quality of the vehicle in different operational, terrain and climatic conditions.
Terénních a klimatických podmínkách.
Czech radio journalist Matěj Skalický has done a lot of research into this subject. He describes the buzz surrounding Tatra around the world in communist Czechoslovakia.
people, especially young boys, they were completely amazed by the idea that someone is traveling across almost 70 countries with this truck, which was also a movable house for the members of the expedition. And they were following it on TV, in the newspapers, sometimes even in the radio when some big things happened on the road. On top of that, Czechoslovak TV also sent a few special foreign correspondents to meet the expedition on the road, which was not very usual during this period of time. So you can imagine how big thing this expedition was 30 years ago.
The five-member Tatra crew covered around 130,000 kilometers in 37 months, finally coming home in April of 1990. But while smaller crowds did welcome them back, interest faded very fast. After all, the country had just undergone the Velvet Revolution.
They had departed from the totalitarian Czechoslovakian Socialist Republic, and they returned to Czechoslovakian Republic with democratic regime, Mr. Havel as a president, and so many things going on that nobody cared about some expedition that traveled around the world for 3 years when history had been making in Czechoslovakia.
Another of the expedition's aims was to gather film material that would bring the 67 states the crew visited to Czechoslovak TV screens. But again, there was no interest, and the cassettes of footage gathered dust in archives until reporter Matěj Skalický began looking into them.
It was me and National Film Archive that found them again last year and opened them again. And I'm so glad that we, as a Czech radio, were able to buy a license to screen them after 30 years. This Saturday, in Czech radio's biggest studio at the Vinohradská Street in the central Prague. So come and see them. It's 3 hours of amazing documentary that includes shots from America, Guatemala, Galapagos Islands, Australia, China during the protests in 1989, South of America, Middle East, Syria with monuments in Palmyra that were probably destroyed by so-called Islamic State. So it is really, really interesting to watch it, and everybody is most welcomed to visit us on Saturday and see it.
On Saturday, two Tatra trucks will stand in front of the main Czech radio building. One will be of the same type used in the late 1980s, while the other model will be setting off on a fresh Tatra Around the World expedition later this year.
Ian Willoughby with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague International. Icelander David Arnorsson has been a baker all his life. He ran a successful bakery in Iceland, but always dreamt of setting up a business abroad. 2 years ago, he moved to the Czech Republic, opening a bakery called Arctic Bakehouse at Prague's Újezd, together with his friend and business partner Gudbjartur Gudbjartsson. Their sourdough breads and Nordic pastries became an instant hit with both the locals and tourists. I met with David Arnorsson at their new branch in Myslíková Street, which is to open in just a few days' time, and I started by asking him why he decided to leave his successful business in Iceland and start from scratch in Prague.
I've been a baker since I was like 13 or something. It's the only profession I've ever done in my life, and I'm 40 years old now, so I have quite experience. I set up a business in Iceland, but still in my heart I always wanted to go abroad in a nice city and put up a business there. So it was always in there, and it was like when you have a dream, it's bothering you a little bit if you don't follow it. And me and Vipers we had a little business together in Iceland. And then we had this idea to do it in Prague. Of course, I had to like the city, I have to be able to live there. So I came for a visit for 1 week, and on the second day that we decided, let's do it. And now I'm basically following my dream, and it's coming really alive, and it's true. So, yeah, that's the reason, you know. And I felt so deeply in love with the city, it was a no-brainer to do it.
But why Prague, of all places in Europe? Why have you chosen Prague?
When I've been, traveling, I'm always open-minded for this idea, but it was something special. It's really hard to explain. It's just a feeling. And when you just let the heart control you a little bit, amazing things can happen. And me and my partner, he was living here, and we decided to do something together, and it clicked really well, and we did it. And so we took 1 year in preparation, and after 1 year, then we opened up the shop, and we've been open for 2 years now, and I'm stunned. I'm so humble about how people are taking us here, like personally and the business. Everything is perfect.
What was your first impression of the city when you first arrived here?
And people told me, like, do you know anybody from Czech? And they're like, no. And to be honest, they were like a little bit longer to get to know them. But when you get to know them, they're best. So I have a lot of Czech friends now. And of course, all my customers and my regulars, they are my friends. So I'm really fortunate.
You set up your bakery nearly 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you focus mainly on sourdough bread and traditional Icelandic pastries. Mm-hmm. What are some of your best sellers and what do Czech customers really like?
Yeah, we are, the traditional Icelandic pastries we have, but it's really like influenced by many countries. You know, what you see in Arctic Bakers is basically the recipes I've been developing in my head after I see an idea somewhere and I cannot even explain it. And I would say, Czech people, they took croissants, I can say, and baguettes, and Arctic Monk is the best-selling bread that we have.
What are Czechs like as customers? Your breads are not the cheapest. Are Czechs willing to pay extra for quality?
Yes. If you take a look at how many customers I have, then like I told you before, when we opened up the door, it's been like busy from day one. So yes, so answer to that question is yes. And of course, I think it's all around the world. It doesn't matter where you are. It's like people pay for high quality and they think about their health and what they're putting inside of their body and stuff. And I totally agree with that we don't save money there. We should save it somewhere else. And that was one of the purpose to come here is like give, Czech people opportunity to have high quality standards in this field. So I don't come and live in a city and just do nothing. I wanted to make it a little bit better, and I hope that I'm doing that.
And as a baker, what do you think about traditional Czech pastry and about Czech cuisine in general?
Well, as far as I go, where it's done in high standards, and I like it. And I've promised myself that I'm going to go deeper into it and maybe like try to make it even a little bit better. And never say never, but maybe I will have some traditional Czech things going on in my bakery. But I have to understand it. I really have to like be there, with my heart all in. So yeah, it's really good. And it's fun to take another traditions and try to put your little touch on it. So, yeah, I'm really impressed.
What is your favorite Czech meal?
Ooh, it's a tough one. Everything that comes to meat, like pork and stuff, when it's like some Czech cuisine, I go for the pork, yeah.
As you said, it took you a while to get to know your Czech friends because Czechs tend to be more reserved, less open, and they also have a reputation for being a bit grumpy. Mm. What's your impression of Czechs, and do you see some similarities between Czechs and Icelanders?
I would say no to that question. There are some people, of course, that are Czechs that remind me of Icelandic people, but when we are coming from a nation like Iceland where everybody's open and then all of a sudden you are in a different culture, it takes time for me as a person to get used to it. Now I totally understand everything, so I'm really enjoying meeting Czech people now. And there's, of course, a little bit of difficulties there because my language skills in Czech is not that good. And I promised myself that I would be better by this time, but it's been busy. So I'm looking forward to like get more skilled in Czech. And I know that when that will happen, I'll get to go more deeper into the connection of the people.
Was it a difficult process in terms of bureaucracy for you as a foreigner setting up a business here in the Czech Republic?
Yeah, I would say it was mainly because of, our language. Like afterwards, we were thinking, what were we doing? Coming from Iceland, coming to Prague, me and Gilbert, we were always talking about like, this is crazy. But we both believed this was going to work. So yeah, we had difficulties there. And of course, because it's our first time, but now we're doing it again now. We open up our second location and all these permissions and stuff. We know where to go. And of course, we have people that are assisting us with this kind of stuff now. And so we're just learning how Czech people do this. And now we know. And so it's not difficult anymore.
Do you still feel here in the Czech Republic as a visitor, or do you regard it now as your second home?
This is my home now. It's like I can feel it when I'm traveling back and forth from Iceland to here, because I already, from day one, since I came, I decided to live here. And of course, in the beginning, you know, people treated me like a foreigner and tourist maybe, but the only feeling that I have now is like I'm one of you guys, and that's an amazing feeling, you know, and it makes it much easier to be here. So, yeah, I have no feelings that I'm a foreigner at all.
Is there something that you miss about Iceland, or what are the things that you miss most about your home country?
Yeah, that would be the sea, because I cannot see sea from here. Like in Iceland, you can see it everywhere, and yeah, I would say definitely the sea. Yeah.
And when you visit Iceland, what are you looking forward to when you are returning to Prague?
I would say my friends here and my company in my work. It's not a work for me, it's a passion, it's my hobby, it's my everything. So I miss my company a lot when I'm away. Yeah, friends and my company.
Icelandic baker David Arnorsson talking about his life in the Czech Republic. Malešov is a small town in central Bohemia, located some 7 kilometers southwest of Kutná Hora. At the edge of the town, on top of a rock above a reservoir of the river Vrchlice, stands a monumental medieval fortress. The building, dating to 14th century, had been for years falling into disrepair, until a young entrepreneur, Ondrej Slačálek, bought it and gradually rebuilt it to its former glory. I visited Malešov some time ago to meet the owner.
We are now standing inside the fortress at Malešov in central Bohemia, and I'm standing here with the owner, Ondrej Slačálek. How did you actually get the idea to live in a fortress?
Well, it is difficult to say how I got the idea. It's just, you know, you wake up one day and you feel that you want to do something. I knew that I wanted something like that and live in a medieval building and wanted to actually restore it, because it's not only about living in such a building, but also the process of the restoration and repair is something that actually was interesting me. So it was about when I was 17, 18, I kind of already knew that I was eventually going to be looking for something like that. And then after I finished my university, when I was around 24, 25, I actually actively started looking for a building like this. And after a couple of years of search, I actually bought this, which is 15 years ago now.
So how did you choose this particular place? Do you actually come from this region?
Well, I knew this place, yes. My mom, actually, she comes from Kutná Hora, which is 5 kilometers away from here. And my grandparents are from villages that are within about a kilometer, 2 kilometers range. So I knew about the building, but when I actually made up my mind that I'm now looking for a building like this, I actually didn't want to jump after the first building that I knew. I wanted to make sure that maybe there is not something more interesting and more fitting that ideal of a castle or of a small castle that I had. So I actually traveled around the country for almost a year, took trips and visited many, many locations, many buildings. And actually, I almost bought another very interesting site. But for various reasons, I actually came back to this. And although the building is kind of simple, I would say, more fortress-like, that was something I wanted. So I actually bought this place at the end.
What was the state of the building when you first saw it?
I would say it was before becoming truly in a bad shape. So I was lucky that the village somewhat within their abilities and interests, they actually tried to at least keep the roof in a good shape. So although it wasn't completely falling apart, there was already some moisture getting into the building. So some of the wooden structures within were on the verge of falling apart, but not all of them. So I just came in the right moment to actually, within about a year, do the first investment into rebuilding completely the roof, which basically then gave me the time to do the remaining restoration, which then took another 15 years. So that was kind of a good luck. Otherwise, the building was basically uninhabitable, because it was for 300 years it served as a grain storage. So there was rudimentary electricity, but beyond that there was nothing, no water, running water, no sewage connection, no, of course, interior equipment or anything like that.
So how did you go about the reconstruction? Did you yourself had any experience with reconstructing buildings?
No, not at all. It was clear that I was coming into it very inexperienced, and I only gained the experience during those 15 years of the restoration from learning the basic carpentry through basic masonry and all the different crafts that you can think of. And me and my friends, we have kind of done a lot of the work here ourselves, but a big part was done also by companies, be it water and sewage system, which is a very specific type of job, which I didn't long to learn. And then later, when we had a bigger pieces of the medieval constructions restoration, like the castle walls, that was also done by people who were more experts in this than we, who were basically amateurs, even after those 15 years.
As you said, the reconstruction obviously took a long time and it was quite a lot of work. Were there moments when you actually thought that you would give up?
No, never. That was the good thing about the whole project, is that not for a second ever I had a feeling of, oh my God, you know, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have done this, what am I doing, why don't I sell it? In fact, it was a perpetual cycle of excitement of planning what's going to happen the next year and what am I going to do, and satisfaction when it would happen every year, and then, you know, planning again. The only frustration that was going through the whole thing was constant worry about finances. Although I always worked in corporations, I basically spent all the money that I made on the restoration. And I have to say, there were frequently moments where I was getting very, very worried that, you know, financial side wouldn't work out. But that was the only maybe doubt or any worry that I had.
And when you were reconstructing the building, did you already have an idea of how you wanted to use it in the future? Did you want to move here and live here permanently, or what was your idea?
I always had these kind of three main goals, which I have been basically holding the whole time. The first goal was to restore it to a state where people who actually are interested in history, and not only in history as kind of learning about it, but also living in it, because I was like that when I started. I used to do medieval fencing and I was, you know, dress up and all that. I do it once in a while as well, but there's still plenty of people who do that. So this is a place where they come and they pay some actually very, very low fee to be here, and they experience the medieval times here. The second was actually for some commercial use, and that was mainly driven by the financial question that I had at the beginning. Would I be able to finance this? But fortunately, the more I get into this and the closer I get to the end, I don't need that income anymore for the restoration. So I'm doing that less and less, except weddings. Weddings tend to be actually kind of nice. And the third reason was to live here, because, I mean, I spent so much time here working, I wanted to live here, which also that goal was fulfilled almost 8 years ago by now. I restored an apartment. I still work in Prague, so I partially live in Prague, but I more and more live here, actually.
You successfully reconstructed the fortress, and then you got another idea, and that was to revive an ancient brewery.
Yeah.
How did you get this idea?
There was an idea I got on a trip somewhere where I saw actually a medieval castle ruin, which was obviously in the later period used as a brewery, and there was this kind of olden writing on the wall, brewery, and I was like, wow, that's interesting. So it was kind of the first thought, and I knew there was actually a brewery here in Malešov since the 16th century until 1942, when it actually closed down during the war. And it was also a motivation that I was thinking, well, eventually I would like to actually live here, not just travel between Prague and here. I would like to live here, so I need to find a business that would actually sustain me. And I was thinking, if I build a business, it should be something I really like. And I put together a group of people, a team of guys who are my partners, co-owners. Eventually then, in a later stage, I got together another big group of investors who actually invested into the brewery. So now the brewery has been open since March of this year, and it seems it's going well. The only bad thing is that I'm the only guy who doesn't get any salary from it yet. So I'm hoping that the business will grow eventually so that I actually fulfill that initial goal of actually getting paid and being able to live out of that.
Ondřej Slačálek talking about fulfilling his dream of living in a medieval fortress. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague International. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.